Do you want to build a snowman? What is it that we see most within that scene? And with that song, we see two individuals who are trapped within prisons. Different kinds of prisons for each of them, but both trapped within prisons. Elsa is trapped within a prison of not only four walls of the room that she's stuck in, but she's imprisoned by fear of what her powers can do. These powers that have been building and growing, which she hasn't been able to control. And you see where Dad is telling her, conceal, don't feel. Try to trap those powers in, but that fear of what might happen has her physically trapped where she cannot leave her room, right? But at the same time, you've got Anna, which is just as imprisoned as Elsa. She might be outside of that room and she might have more space, but she's still trapped within the walls of the castle that they live in. Trapped with nobody to talk to, nobody to play with, no interactions because of the fear of if there's people inside with her that they might find out what's going on with Elsa. And if they find out what's going on with Elsa, then, you know, the whole world can implode. But both of them being imprisoned because of that wall that lays between them, right? The sisterhood where they used to be so close and had each other no matter what. And then all of a sudden, after the incident that happened with Anna being frozen, that this prison wall divides them to where you can't even see them talking anymore. There are so many ways that we can get imprisoned. So many ways that we can have walls built around us, develop that trap us in or out of something that can make it so that we have the inability to live in the way that we need to be living. And I think, to me, fear is one of the ones at the top of that list. Fear of what might happen, fear of failing, fear of people finding out, fear of affecting other people, fear of all sorts of different things that can happen that kind of suspend us and paralyze us with an inability to move and to act. I think the other one that entraps us is insecurity. And I think I put this one at the top of my list because I think insecurity could define the majority of my life, besides frustration. But in insecurity, I've one that I've grown up my whole life insecure, and I admit it, and I partly admit it because I've outgrown some of it. Definitely have not outgrown all of it. But if you can believe it, I grew up a pretty skinny kid. Can you believe it? And I say a pretty skinny kid, and skinny was probably not the definition. There's got to be something more extreme than skinny that would define me. I grew up being called Skinny Bone Jones. I think the worst being when I finally got to ride a 10-speed bike. You know, 10-speed bike, they got pretty big wheels, and we'll see how many catch this reference. But when I started learning to ride a 10-speed bike and I got on it, I got called Kermit the Frog. And they're all going, why would it be Kermit the Frog? Because Kermit the Frog would ride his bike with these stick little legs, and so they were calling me just these stick legs riding this bike. The insecurity that didn't end as an adult, I mean, still today, because of my size, I get people accusing me of having an eating disorder. Okay, I do not have an eating disorder. I have a hereditary issue with a really high metabolism that keeps me skinny. But having people look at me and watching everything I eat and wondering, you know, is she eating? Is she going to the bathroom after she eats? Is that weight natural or is this a problem that she has? Really can keep an individual pretty insecure of how people look at you. I mean, I've grown up with a lazy eye compounded upon that. If you don't know it, I have a lazy eye, and when I look to the left, this eye goes where it's supposed to, and this eye does this. And I would sit in class, and if somebody would call me on this side, and I'd turn and look at them, one eye would be looking at them, and one eye would look at the ceiling, and I can't tell you how many times people would freak out and scream in the middle of class because of that eye as if I was possessed, which just deepened me into that insecurity of people seeing it and how people would react. And then I get to high school, and not only do I have this skinniness issue, and not only do I have this eye issue, but somewhere in high school, I developed a shaking issue, benign essential tremors, they call them, where I just naturally shake. And I would have people that I would reach out to shake their hand, or I would be doing something, and I would shake, and they'd again freak out about it. And now here, it's not bad enough as an adult to be accused of eating disorders, but in high school, I had people accusing me, hey, Stacy, are you on drugs? Is that what makes you shake? I mean, I was a good church girl and in Girl Scouts, and here I've got people accusing me of doing things to myself that would make me shake when I had a diagnosed condition of you shake, and that's just part of who you are. And you just put these together, and it just kind of creates a world where you really don't want to interact with people sometimes, because it's, what are they going to freak out about? What are they going to accuse me of? What are they going to think of me that's not the positive things about me, but these freak things that I have no way of controlling, nothing that I can do about them? Well, insecurities, fears, all of these things can just imprison us and freeze us in place if we allow them. And Joseph in our story, he's very much frozen into a place and something he can't control any more than Elsa can control her powers at this point in the story, or I could control any of the things that are part of the DNA of who I am. But Joseph, remember from last week, was thrown into a pit by his brothers. The brothers that he was supposed to trust, the brothers that he was supposed to love, that were the big brothers that were supposed to take care of him, threw him in a pit out of jealousy, and then sold him off to Ishmaelites that were on their way to Egypt to be able to get rid of him so they wouldn't have to deal with him and they wouldn't be threatened by how much their father loved him, or that his dreams had him potentially where he was going to rule over them. And so here Joseph heads off to Egypt, and when the Ishmaelites get to Egypt, they sell him to one of Pharaoh's men, one of his court officers named Potiphar, okay? And so Potiphar takes him in as a slave. Here the boy that, you know, stayed in the house and stayed close to mom and dad and didn't have to be out watching the sheep turns into a slave. But Joseph gets lucky because most slaves, they were out there building the pyramids. They were out there working the land. They were out there in hard manual labor. But not Joseph. Joseph got lucky. Joseph got sent to do housework. Joseph got sent to take care of Potiphar's business within the household. And it says in the scriptures that Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern him with anything except the food that he ate. He trusted Joseph enough that he said, okay, you take care of all of this. I see that you are loyal. I see that you are responsible. I see that God is with you. You go ahead and you take care of all of it. Well, Joseph's doing his business, and he's being a good boy and doing the things that he should be doing, and then Potiphar's wife takes a liking to Joseph and takes a liking to Joseph and tries to seduce Joseph, and over again, Joseph is holding his ground and being a good boy and saying, no, 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 I can't, I can't, I can't, we can't. And eventually Potiphar's wife gets so upset at him saying no that she basically screams rape. Basically screams, you know, he tried to seduce me. He tried to get me into bed. Goes and tells the other court officials, the other servants, and then eventually tells her husband, that man you trust so much, he tried to take advantage of me. And so Potiphar has him thrown in prison. But again, here Joseph kind of lucks out, because he should go to the hard prison with the rest of the criminals and the slave population and the lower class, but he doesn't get sent to the rotten prison. He gets sent to the prison for the king's officials. This is the nicer prison, okay? This is the nicer place to be, and gets lucky because it puts him in a pretty decent place. It sets him up to be able to be the interpreter of dreams that we're going to start looking at next week. But the thing I want to see here is that these things were out of Joseph's control. I mean, Joseph did what was right. Joseph said no over and over again. It was out of his control to be sold into slavery. It was out of his control to get put into Potiphar's house. It was out of his control of what the wife said and how the husband responded. It was out of his control to get into that prison. Like so many things in our life seem out of our control. But the important thing is when we see Joseph in the prison, and it says here in Genesis 39, chapter 23, after 22, the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. So he said, okay, you get to take care of the guys that are in here that belong to Pharaoh. You get to be the one to wait on them and take care of them and make sure they get their food and everything. But look at verse 23. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. You see, Joseph's story in so many ways is pretty rotten to this point. From the moment he went into the pit all the way through prison is pretty rotten. Thrown in a pit, sold into slavery, put into labor in a house in a foreign land, accused of attempted rape, and thrown into prison and put to work. I mean, these all seem like pretty terrible circumstances and ones where any of us could throw up our hands and say, I quit, I give up. Life is not in my favor. This is just rotten, dumb luck. I'm done. I can't get a break. I can't get ahead. It just seems like one thing after another, and it could be so easy. But we see in the story God's hand with Joseph, that he says, you know, rotten things are happening, but I'm going to keep taking care of you. I'm going to keep guiding you. I'm going to keep being with you. And no matter where you are and no matter the circumstance or how tough it may seem or how much it's not in your plan or the way things you want them to go, but I'm going to give you success in what you do because I'm with you, I love you, and I have a plan for you. Well, how do we look at this in our life? How do we look at the imprisonment of Elsa under her condition? And how do we look at Joseph in all of this and God's promise of taking care and succeeding? And remember, this promise is not just to Joseph. God promises the same thing to all of us. He says, I got plans for you. I'll make your path straight. I'll take care of you. I know what I want to do with your life. I know what I want to happen. I can see the future for you, and I can see it looks good if you'll just have faith in me. But the question is, how we prevent the walls from being up that we put up? Because there are ones out of our control. There are things within us and about us and in our DNA and things happening around us that we can't control. We got to just figure out how to deal with them. But there are things that we can control. How do we look at those shortcomings and fears and insecurities that we have and be able to figure out how to get past them? To be comfortable in who we are, to be secure in who we are, no matter how people look at us. How do we build tough skin? To be able to say, you know, people can accuse me and people can say things about me and people can have their judgments, but I know the truth. I know who I really am and I can stand strong in that and I can hold my head high because I know who I am. And if you're saying those things, it means you don't matter to me. How do we stand strong even when we have the setbacks? To not find ourselves disheartened or discouraged or ready to give up and put those walls of quitting around us. But how do we see those setbacks and look at God and say, okay, that didn't go well. That didn't go the way I wanted it to. God, what's the next step? What's the next step so I can keep moving forward and continue in your plan, even though it's not that plan that I thought it was going to be? How do we press ahead? I wanted to have us stew on that. And as I was stewing on that, I ran across this video, and I thought it worked pretty well for tonight. And since some of you share a love for Soul Pancake that I love, here's a little Soul Pancake for us to think about what those walls are that we put up and what we do about those walls.